Hello, I'm Matt Wells, and this is Media Talk. Coming up this week, expenses crackdown, never mind the MPs, should the publicly funded BBC be forced to open up its accounts? Also in the podcast...
You can't hope and expect to be a national broadcaster and to be in the middle of national life without also having to accept that when the nation is debating, maybe even fiercely debating, moral values, cultural values, or other big issues of the day, that you're not going to get absolutely drawn into that.
Director General Mark Thompson defends the BBC's position in public life, just as Jonathan Ross puts his head above the parapet again. Plus, who guards The Guardian? Is the world's leading liberal voice more like Pravda when it comes to reporting trouble in its own backyard? And...
Welcome, welcome, Cleo. Congratulations on your wobble. The good news is that I'm afraid once again the BBC Switchboard was jammed with angry viewers desperately worried about your wobble, and it's all right, is it?
How far from That's Life to number 10? Will the expenses scandal lead to a parliament of TV stars? This is Media Talk from The Guardian. Now, this week, one irascible Scot had to resign after it became clear he couldn't keep control of the debate going on in front of him. So he is hoping I fare a little better than poor old Lord Martin of Gorbals. Let me introduce your panel. Steve Busfield is The Guardian's head of media and technology. The word on the street, Steve, is that you've ditched The Wire and that you've been getting your entertainment from the news this week.
No, I still watch an episode of The Wire every week.
Oh, very good. Glad to hear it. Maggie Brown is a Media Guardian columnist and the author of A History of... Channel 4. Are you looking forward to the revolution, Maggie?
I certainly am.
Will you be leading it from Dulwich?
I doubt it.
Will you be standing for Parliament? That's what we want to know.
Well, we have Tessa Jowell, you see, so I'm not quite sure. She seems to have come out reasonably well.
And we haven't heard anything from Tessa Jowell.
Very silent.
Okay, well, we'll wait for maybe tomorrow's Telegraph. We'll see.
Oh, and well, Harriet Harman lives down the road from me as well. She's always having protesters sitting on her roof.
Well, just as long as they don't come anywhere near you, Maggie. Well, I should say, order. Let's begin.
Media Talk with Matt Wells on Guardian.co.uk.
Now, in between all this hoo-ha about a constitutional crisis and the growing calls for a general election, the BBC this week found itself embroiled in a political row of its own. Ahead of a Commons debate about freezing the licence fee for 12 months, the Shadow Culture Secretary, Jeremy Hunt, said there was still plenty of scope for further cost-cutting. And with the Tories on course to win the next election, we should take note of what he says, I guess. In response, BBC Trust Chairman Sir Michael Lyons said the BBC was already making cuts, and he found himself up against Sarah Montague on the Today programme about the current topic du jour.
If the public saw what the BBC spent on whether it's presenter pay, on whether it's expenses, taxi fares, would they be appalled?
Well, I'm not sure if... certainly there are controversies there, Sarah. Let me be clear about that. This is a very big budget. It is... The BBC is such an important part of British life, covers so many different parts of our life that it inevitably spends a lot of money. Much of it with businesses and organisations outside. Now, let's come to the point.
And
does
some
it
of
use
it on
every
pay
pound
that's too high and on taxi bills that are too high and on expenses that are too high?
Let's just separate those. There is a proper debate about how much is paid for talent, how much is paid for the best journalists, how much is paid for the best entertainers. And we are clear that the BBC should not set the market rate, should not pay more than others are able
is
to pay.
Is it at
that's
the moment?
That is why, at this very moment, Mark Thompson, as the Director General, is leading renegotiation of contracts across the board, seeking to bring them down to prevailing levels. So there is a job to be done here. Let's not balk from that. But it's a job the BBC is doing. And it was not added to or improved by short-term reductions in the budget.
Sure, but when you see what's been going on for MPs at the moment, do you think they would have a right to think, hang about, look at you journalists, and let's those that are paid out of the public purse, let's look at the BBC, that they should be examining their own situation, that they should be making everything public, and then the public would know.
Sarah, expenses are a very important issue. I'm absolutely clear on that. But let me be clear. The BBC Trust took a decision 2 years ago to publish the expenses of all trustees. We've insisted that
should presenters pay? I mean, we know this is causing a problem. It's causing a problem with politicians. We saw an incident recently where a BBC presenter said what they had paid on air in answer to a question from a politician. Should it be public what every presenter is paid, what every journalist is paid, and the expenses, in the same way as it is for politicians?
Well, in the same way that it's becoming for politicians, let's be clear.
Should it become that
further? And I think there is an argument for the BBC going further. We will be publishing this year the expense details in detail of the executive board of the BBC, and I think
should
it does.
Should it go further? Is it your belief that it does need to go further,
but it needs to stop short at the point where people say we're not willing to work for the BBC because actually the level of scrutiny there is quite different to what we would face in working for a commercial broadcaster.
Sir Michael Lyons on Radio 4's Today programme, not quite answering the question. Maggie Brown, this is a very interesting point, isn't it? How can the BBC and presenters at the BBC and journalists at the BBC grill politicians and accuse them of feathering their own nests when the BBC is a public organisation and doesn't publish its expenses and salaries, and indeed has refused freedom of information requests on such matters?
Well, clearly they're going to have to improve somewhat, aren't they? The difference is, of course, MPs are actually standing for election. They are public figures in a different way to most journalists or employees of the BBC. It's clearly not enough, though, for just the top people's salaries and expenses and pensions, contributions, etc., to be laid out. There does need to be a lot more clarity. If you remember, the Jonathan Ross salary only really came to light because a minor part-time worker in the accounts department
leaked it.
And you know, this furore again, incredible furore took place. To be fair to the BBC, we're in a very fast-changing world at the moment. Nobody really saw the effects of the downturn a year ago or the way in which things that looked okay during a boom time now look just simply outrageous. So, yes, there will be more clarity. I'm absolutely certain about that. But whether it's right for every single journalist, who, after all, is an employee, to have, you know, their £65,000 or whatever it is laid out, seems to me unfair.
David Cameron, says that he'll force everyone earning over £100,000 in the public sector, and he includes the BBC and indeed Channel 4 in that, to publish their salaries. Do you think that's a good thing?
Well, indeed, he named Ed Richards in his speech as being one of the particularly overpaid people.
Chief executive of Ofcom.
I seem to remember. I agree with Maggie that, you know, that there is a difference between people who are elected to Parliament and, you know, and have made that choice and are supposed to be our representatives and the BBC. I think if anybody at the BBC was having their moat cleaned on expenses, I think we would want to know about it, and there probably should be a mechanism for it.
Well, it would be quite interesting to know, for example, you know, I noticed that Mark Thompson seems to get into a rather nice car being driven by somebody else outside his enormous home in Oxford. Are we paying for that?
Yes, of course we are. And the issue of chauffeured cars and who gets them and who gets what, and the parties and all of the entertainment that the BBC throws, all of those
things.
They're
not doing so much of that these
days.
They're
not doing so much now. But it is being it's Sky Arts that are doing the entertainment. I mean, if you want to go to the Hay and Wye Festival, my goodness me, they'll take you. But no, the key thing here is really to hold on to the fact that the BBC clearly has fat it can cut. It clearly has unacceptable practices. And it's partly because, as Lyons says, it's such a big organisation. Doing it in a sympathetic manner is quite difficult, but I'm sure it's happening. And we all know, don't we, that the price of talent is being negotiated down quite ruthlessly, or they're being dispensed with, either at Channel 4, ITV, anywhere, and especially the BBC Two now.
An interesting sidebar to all of this talent, you talked about Jonathan Ross, Maggie, is that Jonathan Ross is having his Radio 2 show. It's going to be pre-recorded from this weekend, I read on Media Guardian.
Well, there's clearly a sort of a thing with Jonathan Ross where they're just wondering about how much they can trust him and, you know, and whether they need to sort of pre-edit him before he comes out. And, you know, and I think it's a symbol of a much wider thing, which the politicians have latched onto, which is the press, and particularly the Daily Telegraph, have put the politicians on the back foot. But with an election coming, that, you know, that the politicians want to try and get the media on the back foot.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they can do this with the BBC, and they're desperately trying to. So, you know, so that's why they're having the debate about the licence fee and, you know, and its right to exist. This is why they're talking about standards and decency, and this is why they're talking about, you know, how accountable is the BBC. The Tory party are trying to make their position slightly easier in the run-up to election by putting the BBC and the people who report on them on the back foot.
Well, what should we think about the Tory policy in relation to the BBC? We need to take it seriously because it's going to be enacted, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, Jeremy Hunt also made quite fierce onslaught on the chairman of the BBC, saying that he took grave exception to some of his remarks, that he was in danger of straying into politics when he was talking about whether or not the licence fee should be top sliced and what should happen to any surplus, i.e. the Lion's view is it should be handed back to the public. He was very, very forthright about this. It did also point to something else which hasn't really come out yet. The BBC Trust is in many ways a bit of a fudged body. Whether the Tories will actually go back on this and either restore them as governors or put the governance of the BBC under an entirely different body, that is clearly up for grabs too.
Just before we leave this subject, from the blogs, excellent post from a failed comedy writer, and I think there's a clue in his name here about the blow to the BBC, probably based on his own experience. He says, the BBC TV comedy department currently employs two comedy executive editors, two nations and regions executive editors, comedy entertainment executive editor, comedy editor, new comedy and entertainment editor, head of comedy, creative head of, listen to this, creative head of mainstream comedy, creative head of comedy talent, head of comedy brackets Wales, executive editor, bracket, it goes on and on, I shan't read them all out. He goes on to say it's hard to tell how many there are as the BBC do not make this information publicly available. None of these, he says, actually has the power to get a programme made. That decision is made by the Controller of Comedy Commissioning, all of whom are on pay grades 10 or 11, which apparently means they get paid between £38,000 and £65,000 a year. This is not untypical of the BBC, he says. Well, let's stick with the BBC just for a little, because the BBC Director General Mark Thompson has been talking to the Observer's editor John Mulholland, as subscribers of Media Talk will know, because we put that interview out over the weekend. It was a wide-ranging interview that covered the continuing impact of the Ross Brand affair, the cultural heritage of the BBC, and the ever-thorny issue of the licence fee. Here's what the DG said when our man asked him about the validity of the BBC in a competitive marketplace, especially at a time when many of its commercial partners are suffering.
I mean, we're not as big as we were in the 1920s, but commercial media should have recognised this is a market where there is a very, very big public intervention. As it happens, I think that the focus of the debate at the moment is less about the BBC's public services. I know there's been some argument at the margins around local media, around our educational offering, but actually, by and large, we think we've made the BBC's public services rather more distinct and different from the market, whether you're talking about BBC One or Radio One in recent years, and actually we get rather less criticism about those than we used to. The main area of debate at the moment is around Worldwide, the BBC's commercial arm. The good thing is Worldwide is now an exciting going concern. It's one of the very few British media organisations with a genuine global strategy. We've just won a Queen's Award for Exports, and we are genuinely taking the BBC brand around the world and lots of British content and British talent with that brand. But I do accept, of course, that there's a debate around the edges about what are the boundaries of what the BBC should do commercially. I broadly think what we do is justified. But again, I'm very happy to talk to colleagues from other media organisations, both about those boundaries, but also about other ways in which we can take some of the benefits we've got and share them or combine with others to create an exploitation vehicle for British content, which is not just useful to the BBC, but to British media as a whole. In the UK, you know, iPlayer, public service iPlayer, could potentially, it's been a great success for us, it could potentially be a national asset. It could be an asset which could help commercially funded broadcasters monetize their content in new ways. Internationally, again, we'd like to find ways in which other media players in this country can reach global audiences in ways which make their business models work better. All I would say is I absolutely appreciate that the Worldwide is absolutely the moment, the place where the shoe pinches for many commercial media players in the UK at the moment. All I would say to them is I think potentially we could look together at whether there are opportunities for cooperation in the commercial sphere as well.
And, of course, the biggest area for cooperation in relation to Worldwide is the tie-up with Channel 4. And it does seem as if this is going to go ahead. What did you make, Maggie, of what Mark Thompson was saying about the BBC there? I mean, I thought, elsewhere in the interview, one of the most interesting things he said was that, in relation to the BBC's market intervention, comparing it to the States, where there's no BBC, yet the commercial media there is still in the doldrums. In fact, it's worse there. So that's quite a good defence that I haven't heard articulated about the BBC.
No, and I mean, the other point is that we always overlook the impact now of Sky. I mean, in over 9 million homes and with all of that subscription funding coming in. His bigger point, though, I'm not sure he's totally correct that it's worldwide that pinches, because it seems to me, actually, it's all over that the BBC's size is actually causing concern. It doesn't mean that it should be cut back, because, as he says, it's doing what it's mandated to do. And in another, in the speech that Lyons gave, he pointed out that, okay, it may be self-serving. Their own research says that 85% of the population would really miss the BBC if it were to go. So it's a mixture of things. It's as other broadcasters are cutting back, they're having to do almost instant repeats of their programming. What you get in the BBC is this continual rich flood of new services, new programs, new ideas, which nobody can really counterattack at the moment.
All right, we'll leave that there for the moment. You can hear the full interview, if you've not heard it already, at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk. Now, let's take a look at some of the other media news stories in brief this week. And with the increasingly prominent roles of Joanna Lumley and even Esther Ranson in the lawmaking process, well, Joanna Lumley has said that she's not going to stand for Parliament, more's the pity, but Esther Ranson has said that she's going to stand in one of the Luton seats. Do you think she'd make a good MP, Maggie?
Oh, goodness me. I mean, this idea of celebrity MPs. I mean, I was thinking this morning, I woke up and I suddenly thought, oh, my God, there's going to be a new reality show, which will be, you know, which celebrity MPs are going to get elected, and we're going to have cameras following them around the constituencies, and it kind of opens
up.
Would
be a great show.
Well, maybe it would. I would prefer, actually. Well, look, we have had celebrity MPs in the past, haven't we? We've had Glenda Jackson.
We had Martin Bell, who on Question Time this week, he was you know, pretty much suggesting that he was going to stand again.
He did, and you know, who knows who else will come out of the woodwork. But I mean, if you open up the process, yes, there are bound to be people who've got instant recognition, because that's a shortcut, because we know we're going to have an election next year. So to some extent, celebrities do actually stand, they're a country mile ahead of everybody else, because everybody knows who they are.
I'm not sure we should say Martin Bell's a celebrity anyway. I mean, he was a journalist, which is a slightly different thing. And of course, at one point we did have Ronald Reagan as the leader of the free world.
Well,
look how well that worked out.
Yeah, and we have Arnold Schwarzenegger, of course, in California, or his term is just up, isn't it? The Telegraph's doing very well, isn't it? Out of all this, Steve, the circulation holding up very well.
I mean, more than holding up.
It's been boosted enormously,
and it's fantastically heartening for journalists to think that actually, you know, stories do sell newspapers, and you know, and make people click on websites. It's, you know, it's great news for all of us, but it's particularly great news for the Telegraph. So, you know, congratulations to them for having done it in such a fantastic way. I mean, you know, way that they've sort of spread it out and done the way they have.
We are on day 92 now, and people still seem to be buying the paper and clicking on the website.
And there are still many, many more MPs to go.
Can't wait. But I noticed that Gladiators has been axed from Sky One. Perhaps they could put all the disgraced MPs on in there.
Don't you think, though, with
giant cotton buds?
The point about the Telegraph is actually it's had so far a 2-week campaign. What I did not we've had 5 years really of the Barclay brothers there, and really for most of that period we've been reporting star writers leaving, mergers.
Yeah, on the
cuts,
demise of the Telegraph.
The demise of the Telegraph, and you know, the circulation of kits about 817,000, but you know, it's fallen below the magic million. All of that, and then it comes out with fantastically well-produced editions, you know, for 2 weeks, which have absolutely led the news everywhere. And now I feel they've done a fantastic job. They're going to be Newspaper of the Year. Will Lewis will be Editor of the Year. They're going to just win the whole thing, I think, in the awards ceremonies.
Well, I think you could well be right there. That, you know, the Scoop of the Year and Newspaper of the Year could well be theirs. I mean, I think, you know, we have reported on the Media Guardian website extensively about, you know, about the changes at the Telegraph over the last couple of years. But, you know, but it's probably true to say now that, you know, that actually the Telegraph now is much more settled because it has Will Lewis's people in, and not many of the people, you know, from the previous regime, and the people who stayed clearly bought into the idea.
All right. Well, there's more on all of these stories, of course, including news that ITN may be bought by Getty Pictures, and that Ed Richards is warning against the radio analog switch off. All the news stories of the week at mediaguardian.co.uk. Steve, you were talking about how the, and Maggie, you're talking about how the Guardian has been reporting the Telegraph. The way in which the Guardian reports the media has itself been in the news this week with a, well, something of a hatchet job, actually, in the New Statesman on Media Guardian. It quoted Simon Kellner, editor-in-chief of The Independent, as saying the Guardian uses its media website to, quote, purposely damage their biggest commercial rival. And it went on to say that the Guardian doesn't report its own troubles in as much details or with nearly as much enthusiasm as those of its rivals. So let the self-flagellation begin. Steve, you're in charge of media. So you're in the hot seat now. You're in charge of media coverage at The Guardian. Roger Alton, the editor of The Independent, says in the New Statesman that if he snapped his pencil, it would get into media, it would get into Media Guardian.
Well, it's not really our fault that Roger Alton just provides so much fantastic media monkey material. I mean, you know, the stories that come out about Roger's life are, you know, are funny and varied and many. And he's a highly quotable man.
It's fine. And Kellner, though, Simon Kellner, though, fighting talk, purposely damaging their biggest commercial rival. That's what he says Media Guardian does.
Well, absolutely. And we do not purposely damage our commercial rivals. I mean, there's a point to make to Simon, which really is that The Independent isn't The Guardian's biggest commercial rival, because that's living in a world of newspapers, and actually, you know, the Guardian has commercial rivals everywhere. And I mean, I think the wider point in the piece that, you know, that The Guardian, because it's now multimedia and is now, you know, against, you know, lined up against the BBC and Channel 4 and the New York Times and all sorts of, you know, international competitors. You know, it's true that The Guardian is, you know, a rival with many, many more people than it used to be. But I hope, I believe that, you know, that we report these things as fairly and straightforwardly as we can. Because, you know, the people who read us work for our rivals. Mm. And, you know, if we weren't talking to them fairly and objectively, then, you know, then we would be in trouble. I think the reason people are quite so touchy at the moment is the fact that there's not a day goes by when Media Guardian isn't covered with stories about jobs going, about cuts being made, about budget problems. And it's just, you know, it's a sad fact of life for Simon Kellner that The Independent has been in the middle of a lot of changes that are beyond the journalist's control. I mean, there was a piece that that Simon, I think, took particular offence to a couple of weeks ago, where we got a former Independent staffer to write a piece about what was going on in their newsroom. And the idea behind that piece was, how do we want to reflect what it's like being a journalist doing good journalism when everything around you is changing and, you know, and it's very difficult. And I thought that's what came across in the piece. And it's not the journalist's fault at The Independent that their bosses have been, you know, fighting a boardroom battle for the last couple of years, that their bondholders are demanding $200 million back as soon as possible. And these are things beyond their control. But the fact is, you know, that everybody at Media Guardian, you know, people throughout the British media industry, we have friends who work at The Independent. I certainly don't want to see them out of work. No. As, you know,
But I was just going to say, you say that Media Guardian is covered in bad news about the media industry at the moment. That's self-evidently true. But is there enough bad news about GMG, for example? Has Media Guardian reported the cuts and sackings in GMG regional media in as much depth as it perhaps ought to have done?
I hope so. I think so. We have written about the cuts at across the regional newspapers. We've written about the cuts at The Guardian. We've written about, we did a story this week about the many people who are taking voluntary redundancy, and some of, you know, some colleagues that we've worked with for a very long time who've, you know, who've decided to leave because The Guardian needs to cut its headcount by 50. And we've even had Roy Greenslade pontificating about it, and, you know, and the opportunity, and, you know, and all of us, you know, our coverage, you know, at the bottom of Roy's blog, there was the opportunity to go on and, you know, comment on it and say what you like.
And why people do, don't they? Maggie, you've been on both sides of the fences. You worked you know, at The Independent. You set up there.
I was the media editor there.
Yeah.
Yes.
What do you make about all this?
Well, I think that one of the problems is that The Independent used to cover the media in great detail and with a great deal of verve and independence in the truest form of the word, but it clearly hasn't been able to afford to. We are here, one of the few well-resourced media operators left. And so I'm not saying that we've got a monopoly, but we have seen Press Gazette go down, for example, that there's Broadcast Magazine that does a narrower focused job.
Which of course is owned by GMG now, anyway.
Of course, yes. Mm. So I think that is part of the problem. What you're not actually picking up on here, but we ought to just say, is that although the Independent is the main accuser, the broadcasters, in particular Channel 4 and ITV, are also quoted as being very aggrieved by our coverage, which, as the historian of Channel 4 and as somebody who is, I would hope, a critical friend of Channel 4, I think is really not correct. I think we've done a very fair job.
The quote is that the Guardian used to be seen as a, quote, fellow traveller of Channel 4, and now it isn't. I mean, is that fair?
I think the point was that there was a time in the 90s, certainly the late 90s, when the issue of Channel 4's status was being debated, and they did look at the Scott Trust type of approach, and so they felt also that they had the same kind of values as the Guardian, but the organisations are not the same in any shape or form. And of course, let's face it, the Guardian now, with its video casting and with its podcasting, is increasingly moving into the territory that Channel 4 probably thought it had to.
I don't think we're ever going to trouble the BBC or Channel 4 on that front with our minor little operations.
Now, I'm
here
talking about the interactive side.
Yeah, well, I should say, of course, that if you want to read more about the Guardian, probably best not to go to mediaguardian.co.uk.
Or have your say at the bottom of the...
blog, exactly. I'm just jesting. Right, well, we were talking about live blogs. Your live blogs are getting you into trouble, Steve, on Media Guardian. It was Eurovision this time.
We upset quite a lot of Norway, it's true, with Heidi Stevens' comment that she'd quite like somebody to poke the Norwegian singer in the eye with a fiddle.
Funnily enough, that didn't go down very well in Oslo.
Didn't go down very well in Norway. I think some of the humour might have been lost in translation. I mean, you know, as Jason Deans points out, you know, we are an equal opportunities knocker, and you know, and pretty much every other song got some, you know, some quite gritty comments. I mean, Heidi follows in a rich tradition of British Eurovision presenters who take the mickey out of it.
Well, given Terry Wogan stood down, we needed somebody to poke the Norwegians in the eye with a sharp stick, so to speak.
I think we should be fair to Graham Norton. I think actually he did quite a good job. It's tough to follow Terry, and he clearly didn't follow Terry's advice that you should start drinking after the fifth song and then just keep drinking. Because actually, I thought Graham was still quite
fairly sober at the end.
But he did quite a nice little line in deprecating, self-deprecating.
He didn't do what he did after the BAFTAs, which he hosted, of course, and ended up drinking so much he fell down the stairs in his flat and broke his ribs, which was one of the funniest stories that I saw in the tabloids the days after that. Now we were talking about how Channel 4 reckons we do them down so often. You have a good word to say about Channel 4 this week, don't you?
I do. I thought 1066, The Battle for Middle-earth, was a really clever, really well-made, intelligent piece of, history on, in primetime television, which is, not something that you get an enormous amount about. I mean,
I just hear a noise now. I can just hear Andy Duncan falling off his chair.
Didn't you find some of the old English a little bit hard to take? I found it actually not a very... I watched it because I love history. The other thing, can I just make another Channel 4 point? I'm loving The Big Art Show. The second episode was last Sunday. It's about public art. And you see these people attempting to choose or agree some sort of big installation. And I must say that is a quintessential Channel 4 programme, but it's actually very well done. It's taken them 4 years to make. And, I mean, it's only getting a million or so, but it's one of the one of those sort of little swan songs. Can I also...
I'm going to cut you off there,
right,
frankly, because I wanted to... I just want to get one line in about with our obligatory apprentice line. This week, it should be a line about junior apprentice, because there's going to be a junior apprentice, apparently. The children's TV is your bag, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Is
this really what we need?
I think it's actually quite a good idea.
You can get your recalcitrant children to enter. That'll sort them out. Anyway, right, okay, that's your lot, and indeed our lot for this week. Thank you to the ever charming Steve Busfield and Maggie Brown. If you want to give your feedback, do post a comment on the blog at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk. You can head over to Facebook, or you can follow us on Twitter. Me particularly, do a search for Matthew Wells and see what happens. Media Talk is produced by the eminently reliable Ben Green. Enjoy your bank holiday. We'll be back next week.